107 on 980 WCAP. Monday, on this Monday, July 2nd. I know a lot of people are thinking about their plans for the 4th of July, and maybe you're lucky enough to have this whole week off, and you're going to be spending some time driving around. The good news, Evan and I were talking about a little bit earlier, is that gas prices are continuing to drop just a little bit. What were they, down another penny last week, Evan, in the Merrimack Valley?
Another penny, yeah. You got it.
But if I asked you who spends the most money on petroleum in this country a year, and I told you it was the Defense Department, would you be surprised?
No.
The Defense Department spends more than $17 billion a year on petroleum.
$17 billion?
Billion, my friend, making it the world's biggest consumer of fuel. And to talk a little bit about that and about the effect that it has, and do we need to be spending that much, is General John Cassilaw, a Marine, who is a retired Marine, and is working. What is the name of his group again?
The Crockett Policy Institute.
I love that, the Crockett Policy Group. And we are so lucky to have him join us and talk a little bit on this subject today. General, welcome to 980 WCAP.
Hey, it's great to talk to you today. Thank you.
First and foremost, thank you for your service and your continued service to this country.
It's a privilege.
So, man, when I saw those numbers, I went, yeah, really? Is that the effect that you think a lot of people have when you put numbers like that down on a page?
Well, you know, people like to deal with numbers. 325,000 barrels of fuel a day is what the Department of Defense uses. And that $17 billion, that figure that you used a while ago, what the department actually budgeted for was a little less than 15, so they had to come up with about $3 billion from other accounts, some potentially from the procurement accounts, others from training, in order to pay for the additional cost of fuel that was not programmed for.
So is there a possibility, and I know this sounds flippant, kind of crazy, are we trying to move to, I don't know, hybrid Humvees or something like that?
Well, yes. That's just one element. You know, let me tell you that, you know, the mission of our military is to protect this great country of ours and the citizens, period. You know, it's not about saving polar bears or hugging trees. In our interest, the military's interest in biofuels and other renewable energy, you know, like solar and wind, is what these energy sources bring to increase in combat capability. And so when you talk about, you know, what are we doing? Well, some of it has to do with Humvees. Go to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, where the Army and the Marine Corps train drivers, and you'll see that the drivers are being taught how to be more efficient in driving vehicles. So there's a wide variety of efforts that are underway, both in terms of processes and procedures, as well as developing the equipment. And a lot of it's been done right there in Massachusetts, not far from where you are.
Really?
Natick Labs and UMass Amherst all are involved in efforts.
So, you know, it doesn't make any sense, and I know you guys are looking at this as well, about, you know, why the military keeps its ties to fossil fuels. And, you know, you guys pretty much come out and say not only is it going to, you know, it's going to cost money, but it's going to cost lives as well, because it's almost like a very vicious circle going around, isn't it?
Well, you know, in 1973 and 74, I was a second lieutenant, and I deployed to the Western Pacific. And that was a time, and I know you're too young to remember that, but that was a big oil shock at that particular time. And then you had, you know, President Nixon and others, every president since then, has said, hey, we need to do something about this. What we have, particularly for the military, is a single point of failure. And that single point of failure is our total dependence on oil as a source of energy. And what we need to do to improve our combat capability, do something about what is costing us and the potential for interruptions of the supply, we need to develop alternative sources, and biofuel is one of those alternative energy sources that can help reduce that single point of failure that we have now.
General, tell us a little bit about biofuels and what category is that? You know, is this the Willie Nelson stuff that he drives his bus on to go do concerts type of, you know, effect?
I don't know if Willie uses this or not. You know, I'm sure he's got a number of energy sources he uses, and I don't know if all of them are legal. But when we talk about biofuel, what we're talking about here, the military has said, hey, you know, what we want is a drop-in capability. And when you talk about drop-in capability, that means that we want to have a biofuel that we can mix with the regular oil that products that we have and not have to do one single thing to the engines that we operate, whether we're talking about, you know, a F-18 Hornet or we're talking about a Humvee. So a lot of effort's been accomplished there, and, you know, that's what biofuel is going to do is, you know, operate in those existing machines that we have now.
Is the DOD being proactive in this or enough? Or are they just, you know, sitting on their hands on this matter?
Well, I think the military has had a proud history of being proactive. You talk about the Navy. Navy went from sail to steam to nuclear power. You saw the Army, you know, go from horse flesh to iron horses to move logistically, you know, in the Civil War. And then the Air Force, and the precursor for it, the Army Air Corps, and as well as the Navy and the Marines, you know, developed the ability to fly airplanes in bad weather and at night and et cetera. So, you know, the military all through our history has been in the forefront of innovating, and then we've had the commercial and private sectors benefit from it. And talking about, you know, rare metals, you know, semiconductors, all those types of things. So, you know, right now we've got a situation where the military is out in front, and we're trying to get other people to make sure that we continue to support that.
General, when we're talking about, you know, fossil fuels and making everything go, I mean, that is certainly tied pretty much hand in hand, which is going on. And another thing that we should be looking at, which is going to have an effect in climate change and that long-term effect that it has on the way we do so many things. I mean, just from beach erosions that we're hearing so much about these days and what's going on with the polar ice caps and the like.
The military has recognized for a long time that things are changing. When you talk about what's going on in the Arctic, you're seeing the Navy more involved in patrolling the Northwest Passage and ensuring that our sovereign rights are protected in that area. A lot of work going on with what's going to happen to some of our infrastructure as the seas continue to rise. So the military has recognized for a long time that, hey, you know, this is also going to increase instability in areas where the rise in sea level, where the change in the rain patterns are going to create stresses
right
on populations. So, yes, it's recognized and actions are underway within the military to deal with it as best we can.
As far as our elected officials, our lawmakers, are they behind this? Is there a small, you know, a core of people spearheading this, or has it been falling on deaf ears? And I know that's what you deal with a lot, right, is, you know, trying to make this this issue, you know, aware to the guys that make the decisions.
But, you know, some people say that the worst battles, the toughest battles, are inside the Beltway here in Washington, and a lot of times that's true. What we have in terms of a current situation is the House passed a National Defense Authorization Act that cut funding for development of biofuels and prohibited purchasing of those biofuels until they were cheaper than regular fossil fuels. The Senate right now is going to be considering whether or not to keep that piece of legislation in the overall bill. So, you know, you've got Senator Kerry and Senator Brown up there, and we really need to make sure that they understand that, hey, the people of Massachusetts want them to make sure that we can, the military and the Department of Defense can continue to develop this biofuel and to take that piece out of the legislation.
General, is this a nonpartisan issue? Are you getting support on both sides of the aisle?
I think that that you're seeing both sides understand it. I mean, a lot of these efforts that are continuing now under the current administration were started during the Bush administration. So we talk about national defense, when we talk about increasing our combat capability, when we talk about properly resourcing the military, when we talk about saving lives, this certainly should not be a partisan divide. We should join together in supporting it in a bipartisan manner.
Yeah, amen.
And
amen
part of the
that.
Way to look at it, too, from a policy standpoint, is if you're saving money on fueling the military, then maybe you can use more resources for the troops, for different weapon systems to keep them safe.
Well, that's what we talked about earlier on. You know, we had to take $3 billion to pay for that $17 billion that was mentioned in the introduction, and that had to come from somewhere. That had to come from money that was needed to either support training or equipment, so it's something that needs to be done. And again, Massachusetts, you know, you've got Natick Labs and University of Massachusetts. You've got other organizations up there and companies like AgriVita and Vernunium and Mescoma and organizations like Environmental Entrepreneurs that out in the civilian sector that are pushing hard, you know, to develop this biofuel so that it can be used by the military. And once that is leveraged, and because the military is a market maker, as you've seen, then it can get commercial level and be used by airplanes and trucks and stuff that operates in the civilian sector.
So true. General, final question for me. Of course, this is an election year. Do you see progress being made before voting day, or is this something that is going to be tabled and we'll have to look at it after either we have a new president or the current president gets another four? Do you see progress being made?
I think the Senate is going to take up this after the 4th of July. That's why it's very important, you know, that the good people there in Massachusetts make sure that Senators Kerry and Brown know how important it is to them. So, I'd very much encourage citizens to be involved, to make sure that, the right decisions are made in the Senate and when it goes to conference in the House as well.
So we want everybody to get a hold of their local representative and make your position known, that if you support it or don't, that's the way this country works.
The American way, isn't it?
It very much is. Sir, I want to thank you once again for your service. A great 4th of July. And thanks for joining us here on 980 WCAP. Any websites or we barely scratched the surface. If they want to find out more information or get more in-depth into this?
A good place to start is www.e2.org. That's a good place to begin.
General John Castelaw, retired Marine. You're never a retired Marine. You're a Marine forever. And thank you, sir, for joining us here on 980 WCAP.
Hoorah and Semper Fi.
There you go. All right. 980 WCAP. That was good. Interesting.